or what was left of it. "What sucks, though," the girl continued, pulling out another napkin, "is that those are the same reasons that Jake gave for dumping me when the summer started. It's summer. I don't want to be tied down. I mean, honestly, I can't deal with the seasonal abandonment. It's just too harsh."
"That hair," the man muttered. "I always hated that hair."
The front door opened then, and a couple of guys came in, both of them carrying skateboards. During the ensuing transaction, I finished my slice and tried not to look at the blonde girl, who had pulled one leg up under her and now sat with her chin propped in her hand, eating her lollipop and staring out the window. The skaters found a table, and soon enough, the younger guy came out and delivered their food to them. On his way back behind the counter, he flicked the girl's shoulder, then said something I couldn't make out. She looked up at him, nodding, and he moved on. I glanced at my watch. If I left now, I'd still have at least an hour before dinner. Just thinking this, I felt like I was suddenly wearing something heavy. It wasn't like Seaside Pizza was so ideal either, but it wasn't those same four walls resonating with their emptiness. I got up and refilled my drink. "You should take a lollipop," the girl told me, her eyes still on the window, as I started back to my table. "They're complimentary." Clearly, resistance was futile. This was expected. So I went back to the cup and started to poke around. I was actually waiting for the girl to warn me about the shortage of pink flavors, but she didn't. But after I'd been at it for a moment, she did speak up. "What flavor are you looking for?" I glanced over at her. Behind the counter, her father was spreading sauce across a circle of dough, while the guy my age counted bills at the register. "Root beer?" I told her. She just looked at me. "Seriously?" Clearly, she was shocked, which surprised me enough that I couldn't even formulate a response. But then she was talking again. "Nobody," she said, "likes root beer yum-yums. They are always the ones left when everything else, even the really lousy flavors like mystery and blue raspberry, are gone."
"What's wrong with blue raspberry?"
the man asked. "It's blue," she told him flatly, then turned her attention back to me. "Are you being totally honest right now? They really are your top pick?" Everyone was looking at me now. I swallowed. "Well, yeah." In response, she pushed her chair out, getting to her feet. Then, before I even knew what was happening, she was walking toward me. I thought maybe I was about to get into a confrontation about candy preferences, which would have been a first, but then she passed by. I turned to see her head to the same back door, then open it and go inside. I looked at the man behind the counter, but he just shrugged, sprinkling cheese over the sauce on his pizza in progress. Noises were coming from the back room now, drawers opening and closing, cabinets slamming, but I couldn't see anything. Then it got quiet, and she emerged, a plastic bag in her hand. She walked right up to me until we were only inches apart and held it out. "Here," she said, "for you." I took it. Inside were at least 50 root beer yum-yum lollipops, maybe even more. I just stared at them for a minute, speechless, before I looked up at her. "I might hate them, but they're still candy," she explained. "I couldn't just throw them away." I looked down at the bag again. It was actually heavy in my hands. "Thank you," I said.
"You're welcome,"
she smiled, then stuck out her hand. "I'm Layla."
"Sydney."
We shook. Then there was a pause. When I looked up at her again, she raised her eyebrows.
"Oh,
I said, quickly pulling one out and unwrapping it. I stuck it in my mouth, and just like that, I was 10 again, walking back from the Quick Sip with Peyton after spending my allowance on candy. He always got chocolate, with peanuts, with almonds, with caramel, but I like sugar straight, and time to savor it. In every bag of yum-yums, there were at least 2 root beers. I always ate one right away, then kept the other for after the rest were gone. I thought of my brother up at Lincoln and wondered if they ever got chocolate there. It occurred to me I should tell my mom to bring him some. Just then a phone rang behind the counter. The younger guy answered it.
"Seaside Pizza, this is Mac."
He grabbed a pad, then pulled a pencil out from behind his ear.
"Uh-huh. Yep. That's a buck extra. Sure, what's the address?"
As he wrote, the older man looked over his shoulder, read the order, then grabbed a ball of dough and began flipping it in his hands.
"Delivery's close enough for you to get dropped at the house," he said to Layla. "Call your mom and see if she needs anything."
"Okay," she said over her shoulder. Then she looked back at me. "You go to Jackson?" I nodded. "Just started today." She made a face. "Ugh, how was it?"
"Not so great,"
I replied, then nodded at the bag. "But this helps."
"It always does," she said.
Then she waved, turned on her heel, and began walking toward that back door again. I returned to my table with all my yum-yums and gathered up my trash and backpack.
"Tell her to meet me outside,"
the younger guy was telling the older one as I headed for the door.
"Starter's been stubborn lately. Might have to mess with it." "Don't forget the sign this time!"
We ended up leaving together just as we'd come in. As I crossed the lot to my car, he jogged up to an older model truck. I watched as he reached into the bed, pulling out a magnetic sign and slapping it on the driver's side door. "Seaside Pizza," it said. "Best around." A phone number was printed below. It was late enough now that I could leave and get home right around dinner time. But I stayed until Layla emerged, carrying one of those square pizza warmers. A couple of cars were between us at the first stoplight, but I remained behind them turn for a few blocks, until eventually the traffic split us. Only then did I open another lollipop, which I savored all the way home. Chapter 4. Over the next 2 days, things didn't really improve at school, but they didn't get worse either. I figured out the fastest way to my classes, discovered it was actually easier to find a spot in the upper parking lot, and had 2 conversations with classmates, although one was mandatory, as we were thrown into a group project together. Still, it was something. I didn't go back to Seaside Pizza again, as I was too worried I'd look like a freak, a stalker, or both. Instead, the next day, I met Jen at Fraser Bakery to catch up and do homework. The following day, I went home after school, thinking it might not be so bad. Then I saw Ames's car in the driveway.
"Sydney? Is that you?"
I put my bag on the stairs, then took a breath before walking into the kitchen. Sure enough, there he was with my mom at the table, drinking coffee. A plate of cookies sat between them. When my mom saw me, she pushed them in my direction.
"Hello, stranger,"
said Ames as I walked to the fridge, taking out a bottled water.
"Long time no see."
Although he was smiling as he said this, it still kind of gave me the creeps. But my mom was already pulling out a chair, assuming I would join them. So I did. "How was school?" she asked. Turning to him, she added, "She just started at Jackson this week."
"Really?"
he grinned.
"My old stomping grounds. Does it still smell like Lysol everywhere?"
"You went to Jackson?" my mom asked. "I didn't know that."
Sophomore and junior year.
Ames sat back, stretching his legs.
Then I was asked to leave, politely.
Sounds like someone else I know, my mom said, taking a sip from her mug.
You liking it?
Ames asked me.
I nodded.
Yeah, it's fine. This had been my default answer whenever I was asked any variation of this question. Only once had I told the truth, and that was to Layla, a total stranger. I still wasn't sure why. Just then I heard a buzzing noise, my mom's phone, over on the counter. She got up, glanced at it, then sighed. I totally forgot I'd committed to this children's hospital event last spring. Now they keep nagging me about meetings and budgets.
Remember what we were talking about, Julie, Ames said. First things first.
She gave him a grateful look.
I know.
But I should at least bow out gracefully. I'll be right back. With that, she was gone, padding up the stairs to the war room, which left me with Ames.
So, he said, leaning forward. Now that it's just us, tell me the truth. How are you really?
He always smelled like cigarettes, even if he hadn't just smoked one. I eased back a bit.
Okay.
It's a change, but I wanted to do it.
Bet it's been hard to follow in Peyton's less than ideal footsteps. My little bro felt the same way.
I nodded, picking up a cookie and taking a bite. I wished my mom would hurry up and come back downstairs.
You know, he continued, if you ever need to talk, I'm here. About Peyton. About anything. Okay?
No thanks, I thought. But out loud I said, okay. By the next day at lunch, I was already dreading the final bell. I had no idea how often Ames came over in the afternoons, but I was certain I did not want to see him, much less talk to him, especially if my mom wasn't around. Thinking this, though, I immediately felt a pang of guilt. He hadn't done anything except creep me out, and that wasn't a punishable offense. I knew I could say something to my mom, but she had so much on her mind. And Ames was Peyton's best friend. He'd been supportive during this last crisis, and every one since he'd been in the picture. Even when my dad was sick of hearing about Lincoln and the warden and Peyton's appeal, Ames listened. I didn't want her to lose him, too, especially since I had nothing specific to point to, just a feeling. Everybody has those. There had been a time when I told my mom everything. Even after Jen came into the picture, and then Meredith, I'd always considered her my best friend. We just saw things the same way. Until we didn't. It started with Peyton's initial busts, how surprised I'd been to hear her defend him, even when he did the indefensible. No matter the offense, she could find some reason it was not entirely my brother's fault. And then there was David Ibarra. In those first days after the accident, as my parents dealt with bail and lawyers, all I could think of was this kid, just a little younger than me, lying in a hospital bed. I knew from the reports I both came across and sought out that he was paralyzed and not expected to walk again. But there were not that many more details, at least initially. I had so many questions. I couldn't help but ask them. "Shouldn't we apologize?" I said one day. "Like in the paper or make a statement?" She gave me a heavy, sad look. "It's an awful thing that happened, Sydney. But the law is complicated. It's best if we just try to focus on moving forward." The first time I heard this,
It made me think. By the fourth or fifth, I saw it for the party line it was. I looked at David Ibarra and saw shame and regret. My mother saw only Peyton. From that point on, I was convinced that no matter what we looked at, our views would never be the same. My fourth day at Jackson, I was sitting at lunch with a turkey sub, flipping through my math textbook, when I felt somebody slide onto the wall a bit down from me. I heard some clicking noises, followed by the plucking of guitar strings. When I glanced over, I saw a guy in black glasses, jeans, and a vintage-looking button-down shirt, a guitar in his lap, strumming away. He wasn't playing a song as far as I could tell. It was more bits and pieces, a chord here, a short melody there. Every once in a while he'd hum for a second, or sing a phrase, sometimes pausing to jot in a notebook beside him. I went back to my textbook. A few minutes later, though, I heard a voice. "Oh, Eric, really?" I looked up and there was Layla. She had on shorts, an oversized floral print t-shirt, and strappy sandals, her blonde hair loose over her shoulders. As I watched, she put her hands on her hips, cocking her head to one side. "What?" the guy said. "I'm practicing." "Oh, please, you are not," she replied. "You're running your tired game on this poor girl, and it's not going to work because I already warned her about you." He stopped playing.
"Warned her? What am I, a predator now?"
"Just slide over," he did, looking displeased, and she plopped down between us, turning to face me. "I've been looking for you. I should have known Eric would find you first, though. He's got a nose for new blood."
"Okay, you really need to stop now," Eric said.
Layla flipped her hand at him as if he were a gnat circling. To me, she said, "I'm not saying I believe you're a girl who would fall for this act. I wouldn't insult you that way. But I was. So I've made it my mission to spare others my experience." "We," the guy said, doing one big strum for emphasis, "have been broken up for over a year. I think you can stop now." She turned to look at him, again tilting her head to the side. Then she reached out and brushed his hair back from his forehead. "You need a haircut. Shaggy hipster doesn't suit you."
"Don't touch me," he grumbled.
But it was good-natured, I could tell. He went back to playing, leaning over the guitar, and she smiled, then turned back to me. "Eric's in a band with my brother," she told me.
"They're pretty awful, actually." "Her brother," Eric corrected her, "plays drums in my band. And we're in transition."
"They can't keep a guitar player," she nodded in his direction. "Too much ego in the room."
"Someone has to be the leader," Eric said.
Layla smiled again. "Anyway, they're playing Friday night at Bendo, that club on Overland. It's all ages, free pizza if you get there early. You should come." I was shocked at this invitation. We'd met only once. She owed me nothing. And yet I knew immediately that I would go.
"Sure," I said.
"That sounds great."
"Perfect."
She got to her feet, tucking her hair behind her ears. "Oh, and one more thing. If you want company at lunch, we sit over there." She pointed to the right of the main building, where there was a circle of benches around a spindly tree. On one of them, I saw the guy from the pizza place, her brother, I now understood, peeling an orange, a textbook open beside him.
"Oh," I said. "Okay."
"No pressure," she added quickly. "Just, you know, if you want." I nodded. And then she was walking away, sliding her hands in her pockets. As I watched her go, Eric cleared his throat.
"Our band is not that bad," he told me. She just has high standards.
I didn't know what to say to this, so probably it was good that the bell rang then. He put away his guitar, I packed up my stuff, and then we nodded at each other before heading in our separate directions. All afternoon, though, during two lectures and a lab, I kept thinking about what he'd said. High standards. But she'd invited me anyway. Maybe she'd regret it. But I really hoped not.
I don't know. Jen wrinkled her nose the way she always did when she was suspicious. Isn't that a nightclub?
It's a music venue, I said. And this is an all-ages show. She picked up her pencil, twirling it between her thumb and index finger. I thought we were going to Mare's meet on Friday.
That's at 4. This is 3 hours later.
She wasn't going to go. I'd known it the minute I brought it up. We were not club-goers. Never had been. But our we had already changed. My part of it, anyway. I looked across Fraser Bakery, where we always went after school when we weren't in the mood for Antonella's. A sandwich salad and pastry place. It was that weird mix of chain restaurant and forced hominess, needlepoint samplers, perfectly worn leather chairs by a fake fireplace, your food served on wax paper patterned with red and white checks, silverware tied with a bow. That day, I'd been talked into a specialized coffee drink by the very cute guy working the counter. Dave, his name tag read. Something he swore would change my life. Apparently this meant I'd be way hyped up and keep having to pee. Not exactly what I'd expected.
Just meet me there for an hour, I said, taking another sip anyway. If you hate it, you can leave.
Why is this so important? She asked me, putting her pencil back down. You've never been into clubbing before.
It's not clubbing, it's a band playing a show.
She adjusted her glasses, then looked down at the textbook in front of her.
It's just not my thing, Sydney. Sorry.
I knew Jen well. Once she made up her mind, she didn't waver.
Okay, that's fine.
She smiled at me, and then we both went back to work. The adult contemporary music overhead, Jen's blueberry scone and my piece of carrot cake, our booth by the window. It was all as familiar as my own face. But I found I couldn't concentrate on my calculus as much as I tried. I just sat there and listened to her pencil scrape the page until it was time to go. So I was alone when I walked into Bendo the following evening and got my hand stamped by a bulky guy with a neck tattoo. I'd had a meeting for my English group project at lunch, so I was going in with only my casual invitation and a fair amount of trepidation. Not to mention a lie.
You're going out?
My mother asked me when I came downstairs after dinner, having changed my outfit twice before going back to my first choice. She looked at her watch.
I didn't realize you had plans.
Just meeting Jen and Meredith at Fraser for dessert, I said. I'll be back by 10. She looked at my dad, who was sitting next to her on the couch, as if he might object to this. When he didn't, instead keeping his eyes on the 24-hour local news channel and a report about school redistricting, she said,
Maybe make it 9:30.
I felt a flicker of irritation. Unlike Peyton, I'd never done a thing to warrant suspicion. Even though I was at that moment lying, I still resented it.
Seriously? Mom, I'm a junior.
Now they both looked at me. My mom raised her eyebrows at my dad, who said,
Do I need to remind you that we make the rules?
Come on, I said. I've had a 10 o'clock curfew since I got my license.
Your mother wants you home earlier,
he replied, turning back to the TV.
Do it tonight and then we'll talk.
Now my flicker was a full flame. I looked at my mom.
Really?
She didn't say anything, just went back to the magazine in her lap. I stood there a minute, then another. Then I turned on my heel and left. I couldn't remember the last time I'd been angry with my mom. All I'd felt lately was pity and sadness, along with an overwhelming need to protect her. This feeling was new, and it made me uneasy. Like more was changing than I was ready for. Once inside Bendo, I had no idea what to do with myself. It was a big space, with painted black walls and a bar running down one side. Up front was the stage, where a drum set, microphones, and amps were set up. I'd expected it to be crowded, so I could lose myself quickly. But there was only a handful of people there, most of them gathered around a row of pizza boxes that lined one end of the bar. I felt like it was so obvious I didn't belong there that I should leave before I embarrassed myself.
Hey, you came!
I turned around, and there was Eric, the guitar guy. He was in jeans and a plaid shirt that looked like it came from a thrift shop, this time with a tuner in the front pocket. It looked like he'd gotten a haircut. I was intrigued, I said. He smiled as if this pleased him.
We're trying some new stuff tonight we've been working on. It's a bit meta, so I'm hoping the crowd can keep up.
I nodded, not sure what to say to this. Turned out, I shouldn't have worried as he kept talking.
We've been through a lot of evolution as a band lately, which I think is necessary. Music isn't stagnant, right? So you can't be either. Last year, we were really focused on a more rockabilly slash bluegrass slash metal sound. I mean, nobody was doing what we were doing. But then, of course, everyone started copying our sound and approach. So I had to think out of the box again. I'm telling you, it's a lot of work. Fronting a good band? Anyone can lead a crappy, unoriginal one. Most people do just that. But I...
Suddenly, I felt a hand grip my arm and begin to pull me away from him. I stumbled over my own feet, startled before I realized it was Layla. She was wearing a blue dress and flip-flops, her eyes lined in a dramatic cat's eye. "I'm doing this for your own good," she announced as I looked back apologetically at Eric. "You do not want to get sucked into band discussions with him. You'll never escape." With this, she deposited me at a bar stool, then climbed onto the one beside it. A moment later, Eric joined us, looking disgruntled.
"I was talking," he said to her.
"You're always talking," she replied. "And she's my friend. I invited her." I felt myself blink. Now we were friends? Eric glared at her, then helped himself to a piece of pizza, leaning back against the bar.
"You been here before?"
Layla asked me. I shook my head.
"It's a pretty good place, other than the fact that everything is always sticky. You want a slice?"
Before I could answer, she'd grabbed two paper plates from a nearby stack and put a slice on each. As she slid mine toward me, she said, "Pizza is key to this band's popularity. The thinking is, if you feed them, they will come."
"They come for the music," Eric said.
"Keep telling yourself that," she smiled at me, then took a big bite, glancing up to the stage, where her brother was now behind the drum kit, adjusting something.
"So how was the first week at Jackson? Be honest." I swallowed the bite I'd been chewing. It was delicious, even better than I remembered.
"Not so great."
"You just moved here?"
"No, I transferred from Perkins Day."
At this, she and Eric glanced at each other.
"Wow," he said. "That's big money."
"And a really good school," she added, shooting him a look. "Why'd you switch?" From the stage there was a cymbal crash, followed by some feedback. I said, "I just needed a change."
Layla studied my face for a second. I hear that. Change is good.
Yeah, I replied. I'm hoping so, anyway.
She looked past me then, suddenly distracted. Following her gaze, I saw a girl a few years older than us coming in, dressed in jeans and a t-shirt, her hair in a high ponytail, pushing a wheelchair. Seated in it was a woman in a velour tracksuit. She was the oldest person in the club by at least 20 years. Like always when I saw a wheelchair, I thought of David Ibarra. It was just one of the triggers capable of bringing his face, which I knew well from all the newspaper photos and online stories I'd sought out in the days and then months after everything happened. And then everything else rushing back. See also the sound of squealing brakes, anyone riding a bike on the street, and, to be honest, the sound of my own breath. He was always only a beat from my consciousness. Despite my mom's party line, my knowledge of him, and the need to recall it regularly, was like my penance for what Peyton had done. The sentence I'd been given. The fact that he'd been just days past his 15th birthday when the accident happened. A soccer player. A forward. The fact that the impact crushed his spine, leaving him able to use his arms and upper body, but wheelchair dependent. I could list the fundraisers that had been held to purchase him a high-tech chair, community yard sales, a benefit concert, as well as the civic organizations that pitched in to make his parents' home fully accessible with ramps, wider doors, and new hardware. I sought this out because I felt like I should, as if it might lessen the guilt. But it never did.
They're here,
Layla said now to Eric, jerking me back to the present. Come on. They both got up, crossing over to meet the lady in the wheelchair, just as the girl pushing her reached the center of the club. I wasn't sure what to do, so I stayed put, watching as Eric pulled a table into place, and Layla took over the wheelchair, pushing the woman carefully up against it. A moment later, her brother appeared, carrying a can of Pepsi and a glass of ice. He fixed the drink, then put it on the table as the older girl sat down. Layla looked at me, motioning for me to come over, as if all of this was just the most natural thing ever. And maybe it was, because I went. When I got to the table, she said,
"Hey, Mom, this is Sydney. Remember I told you about her?"
Her mom looked up at me. She had a round, kind face and blonde hair that had clearly been styled for the occasion, and was wearing red lipstick. She stuck out her hand.
"Trisha Chatham, so nice to meet you."
"You too," I said. "You want some pizza?" Layla asked. "It's still hot."
"Oh no, honey. I brought my own snacks. Rosie, can you get my bag?"
At this, the older girl reached behind the chair, unlooping one of those big, colorful, quilted purses from the handle. This one was pink with roses. She unzipped it, then put it on the table, and her mom reached in, rummaging around for a second before pulling out a can of cheese puffs. Without prompting, Layla's brother took it, popping the top, then handed it back to her. "That's Mac," Layla said, pointing at him, "and this is my sister Rosie." I said hi, and Rosie nodded. I noticed that all three women had the same light hair and green eyes, but distributed differently, stretched wide on the mom, pinched tight on Rosie, and on Layla, just right. Mac had clearly gotten his dark hair and eyes from their dad.
"When's the music starting?" their mom asked, taking out a handful of cheese puffs. "Some of us have TV to get back to."
"Mom, we set the DVR," Rosie said.
"So you say." She ate a puff, then looked at me. "I don't trust technology, especially when it comes to my shows."
She really likes her TV, Layla explained to me. Then she turned to Eric, raising her eyebrows.
Right, he said, nodding. We'll get ready.
He and Mac walked off toward the stage. Meanwhile, Layla grabbed two more chairs, pulling them next to the table, then gestured for me to take one before sitting down herself.
So, Sydney, her mom said, taking out another handful of puffs, what's your story?
Mom, Rosie said, rolling her eyes. She was sitting very straight, legs tightly crossed.
God. What? Is that rude?
If you have to ask, the answer is probably yes, Rosie replied.
Her mom waved this off, still looking at me. I said, I just transferred to Jackson, but I've lived in Lakeview since I was 3. She used to go to Perkins Day, Layla added. Rosie and Mrs. Chatham exchanged a look. She needed a change.
Don't we all? Rosie said in a low voice.
Perkins Day is an excellent school, Mrs. Chatham said. Highest test grades in the county.
Mom used to work in school administration, Layla explained to me. She was an assistant principal.
10 years,
Mrs. Chatham said. She offered me the can of puffs, which I declined, then held it out to Layla, who took one.
Still be there if I hadn't gotten sick. I loved it.
She has MS, Layla said, with other complications. It's the worst.
Agreed.
Mrs. Chatham offered Rosie the can. She shook her head.
But you take what you get in this world. What else can you do?
In reply, there was a burst of feedback from the stage, and we all winced. Rosie said,
Great. I already have a headache.
Now, now, Mrs. Chatham said.
They've been working on some new stuff. It's apparently very meta.
I smiled at this, and she caught me and grinned back. I'd had a hunch before. Now it was sealed. I was so, so glad I'd come. Eric, now behind the microphone with his guitar, tapped it with a finger.
1, 2, 3,
he said, then played a few chords. Another guitar player, tall and skinny with an Adam's apple you could see from a distance, climbed up on stage.
1, 2.
Layla rolled her eyes at me. They already did sound check. I swear, he is such a diva. I looked back at Eric, who had turned to say something to Mac. So you guys dated? In my salad days when I was green in judgment, she replied. I looked at her. That's Shakespeare. Come on, Perkins Day, keep up. I felt myself blush. Sorry. I'm kidding. She reached over, grabbed my arm, and shook it. And yes, we dated. In my defense, I was a sophomore and stupid. Eric was back at the microphone, counting again. He doesn't seem that bad. He's not bad. She reached up, pulling her hair back. He's just got a huge ego that, left unchecked, is a threat to society. So I try to do my part.
1, 2,
Eric repeated, tapping the microphone. 1. We hear you! Layla yelled. Just start! Mrs. Chatham hushed her, but it worked. After announcing themselves as the new and improved renowned local band Hey Dude, they began playing. I was no musical expert, and certainly did not have high standards, but I thought they sounded good. A bit loud, but we were sitting close. At first I couldn't make out what Eric was singing, although the melody was familiar. As soon as the chorus began, though, I realized I actually knew it by heart. She's a prom queen with a gold crown, and I'm watching as she passes by. I leaned over to Layla. Is this? Logan Oxford, she finished for me, Remember him? In sixth grade, I had his poster on my wall. I'd had a notebook with his picture on the cover, as well as every song he ever recorded, a copy of his documentary/concert movie, This One's for You, and although I was hugely embarrassed to admit it now, the kind of crush that made me imagine scenarios where we were married. Oh, the shame. And now it was all flooding back in this big, sticky club. I wished Jen had come. She was even more nuts for him than I was.
I don't get it, Rosie yelled across to us. They're playing retro top 40 now?
I believe, Mrs. Chatham said, picking up her Pepsi, that it is supposed to be an ironic take on the universality of the early teen experience. But I might have that wrong. I will admit to tuning out at some point.
I loved Logan Oxford, Layla sighed, eating another cheese puff. Remember his hair and that dimple when he smiled?
I did, Rosie said. Didn't he just get busted for drugs?
Look who's talking. I felt myself blink, but Rosie hardly bothered, just shot her the finger.
Ladies, Mrs. Chatham said, let's be ladies, please.
To say I was taken aback was a huge understatement. Who were these people? Hey Dude was wrapping up Prom Queen now, and after a bit of bumpy transition, launched into You Plus Me Plus Tonight. My inner 13-year-old was swooning as I looked over at Layla, who was singing along. She said, remember this video where he was in that convertible driving through the desert all alone? And the lights appear far in the distance, and then suddenly he's on that busy street? I added.
Yes!
I wanted a car just like that for years, I said. She sighed, propping her chin in her hands.
I still do.
The music just kept going, bringing every one of my awkward early teen memories with them. After another Logan Oxford song, they played one by Star 7. Baby, Take Me Back, I'll Do Better Now, I Swear. And then a medley by Brotown, one of which I distinctly remembered slow dancing to for the first time. There were a few shrieks of feedback, and Eric kept getting too close to the microphone and muffling his own voice. But by the time they were done, a decent crowd had gathered at the base of the stage, most of them girls. When two brunettes ran past our table, singing along loudly and giggling, Layla narrowed her eyes.
Uh-oh, she said. Eric might have groupies.
Can you even imagine?
No, Rosie said flatly.
He could, though. It was clear in the way he brightened, leaning into the microphone, too close again before winding up the final chords with a flourish. The applause was actually loud, with a fair amount of whoops and whistles, and Mrs. Chatham looked around smiling.
Well, listen to that, she said. They might actually be on to something.
Eric was waving to the crowd now, soaking it up, as Mac and the other guitar player left the stage. The brunettes pushed forward, getting Eric's attention, and he crouched down, cupping his ear as one of them spoke. This time, Layla said nothing.
Excuse me? I heard a voice say from behind us.
It was a tall girl with red hair, dressed in a tight black t-shirt and white jeans.
But, are you Rosie Chatham?
Rosie looked at her.
Yeah. I'm Heather Banks. I used to train at Lakewood Rink when you were there.
The expression on Rosie's face was not exactly welcoming.
Mrs. Chatham said,
How wonderful. Were you working with Arthur?
No, Wendy Loomis. And I was just taking lessons, not competing.
She looked at Rosie again.
I just have to tell you, you were amazing. Where are you skating now?
I'm not.
Oh.
Heather blushed.
I didn't realize. I'm...
She got injured,
Mrs. Chatham told her. Knee issues.
But before that, she did 2 years with the Mariposa touring show.
Wow, that's amazing. So you were, like, one of the characters?
I need something to drink,
Rosie announced, pushing out her chair. Then, as we all watched, she just walked away, leaving the poor girl standing there, watching her go.
It's a sensitive issue, Mrs. Chatham said in the awkward silence that followed. You understand, I'm sure.
Oh, totally, Heather said. I just wanted to say hello. You all have a good night.
You too, honey, Mrs. Chatham replied.
Once the girl was gone, she looked over at the bar where Rosie was talking to Mac. Now that I looked at her, I realized she did have a skater's body, small, muscular, and compact. She kind of reminded me of Meredith, although older and with a rougher look to her.
Rosie has issues, Layla explained to me.
Everyone has issues, her mother said. Now go see if she's okay.
Making a face, Layla got to her feet, leaving the table. I wondered if I should follow her, but that meant leaving Mrs. Chatham alone, so I stayed put. After a moment of silence, she said,
"It's good that you came."
I wasn't sure if this was her reading my mind, or she meant from her point of view. I said, "I was nervous, not knowing anyone and everything."
"But now you do," she smiled at me. "And I'm glad to see Layla making a new friend. She's had a tough time lately."
"I heard she and her boyfriend just broke up."
"Second one in 3 months," she shook her head. "Boys this age, they can be brutal, but they're not all bad. At least that's what I keep telling her."
Just then Mac appeared, carrying a fresh can of Pepsi. He was in jeans and a faded Seaside Pizza t-shirt, and looked like he'd broken a sweat playing.
Not that I was looking closely or anything. "That's my boy," said his mom as he popped the tab and refilled her glass. "Thank you." "You need anything else?"
"Not a thing. Sit down."
He did, right next to me, which was slightly unnerving. At the pizza place, there had been distance between us most of the time. The door, the counter, or him standing while I sat. Proximity let me notice things I had not before, like his long lashes and the slight freckling across his nose, as well as the thin silver chain I could just see peeking out from the neck of his t-shirt.
"Cheese puff?" Mrs. Chatham asked Mac, holding out the can.
"Really? Mom?"
"What? It's calcium."
Mac rolled his eyes, looking up at the stage. To me, Mrs. Chatham said,
"He's so healthy these days. It's no fun whatsoever."
"Neither is early onset diabetes," he told her.
His mother sighed, then held the can out to me. When I hesitated, she said,
"See what you've done. She can't even bring herself to take one. You've given the girl a complex."
Mac looked at me.
"Sorry."
"It's fine." I felt my face get hot, which made sense as he was better looking than Logan Oxford at his peak and Dave at Fraser combined.
"I'm not, much of a Puff fan anyway."
God, I was an idiot. I didn't even know what I was saying. Thank God Layla picked that moment to return to the table.
"Eric's looking for you," she informed her brother. "He has, and I quote, notes and feedback for you vis-a-vis your performance."
"Great,"
Mac said flatly, getting to his feet. The silver chain disappeared again out of sight.
"Mom, you staying for the next set?"
"Oh, honey, I'm pretty tired," Mrs. Chatham said. "And my show comes on at 10, so..."
"I told you," said Rosie, who had rejoined us. "I set the DVR.
Hearing this, I suddenly remembered that I was also supposed to be somewhere at a certain time. I looked at my watch. It was just after 9. I should go too, actually.
Let me guess, Layla said. You're addicted to status mystery too and do not trust entirely reliable technology to function properly in your absence.
Rosie snorted.
I said, not exactly. Usually I can stay out later, but there's been some stuff going on. My mom kind of wants me to stick close. So I told her I'd be home early tonight.
It wasn't until I'd finished this monologue that I realized how long and unnecessary it was. I had no idea why I'd felt the need to explain myself quite so much to people I'd only just met. And by the way they stood there looking at me when I concluded, they didn't either.
Whoops.
Well, you go then, said Mrs. Chatham finally, saving me.
But don't be a stranger, okay? Come by the house any time.
I nodded, then got to my feet.
Thanks.
We'll walk you out, Layla said, nodding at Mac.
This parking lot can be a little sketchy. Back in a sec, Mom.
Mrs. Chatham waved, and I followed Layla through the increased crowd toward the door, Mac behind me. Sandwiched between them, I could see people appraising us as we made our way outside, and I was sure I looked like the mismatched piece, the part that did not belong. But that was not a new feeling. And at least, here, with them, it made sense.
Where'd you park?
Layla asked once we were in the lot. I pointed. As we walked over, passing a few people grouped around their own vehicles, she said,
Wow, nice ride. Is that a sport package?
I looked at my car, which was a BMW, that had been my mom's before she decided she wanted a hybrid SUV.
Maybe, I said, feeling wholly ignorant.
I'm not...
It's an 07, Max said, glancing inside. Automatic. So I'm betting not.
Looks like it does have some upgrade, though. See the wheels?
Layla let out a low whistle.
Those are sweet! I must have looked as clueless as I felt, because a second later, Mac looked at me and said,
Oh, sorry. Our dad's just really into cars.
In our house, you get a mandatory education on the topic, like it or not, Layla added. And once you know all that stuff, you can't not notice. Believe me, I've tried.
Hey, dude!
I heard someone yell. We all turned to see Eric at the club's entrance, looking annoyed.
If you're not too busy, I could use my drummer.
He's not yours, Layla hollered back. A band is a collaboration, last I checked.
Whatever!
Eric threw up his hands, then turned to go inside.
We're on in 5. If he feels like joining us.
Layla laughed, and Mac shot her a look.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry. It's just so easy to set him off. And you have to admit, he is pretty insufferable when he gets in his diva mode.
True, Mac replied.
But you're not exactly helping.
It was 9:15 now. I really had to go. I unlocked my car, the lights flashing, then stepped forward to open my door.
Thanks for the invite, I said to Layla. It was really fun.
Good, she said. And Mom's right. You should come out to the house sometime. I'll teach you about your car, even if you don't want to learn.
I smiled.
Sounds good.
See you at school, Sydney.
She waggled her fingers at me, then took a few quick steps to fall in beside Mac, who was already heading toward the club. The lot was much fuller than when I'd gotten there, with more cars still arriving. For some people, the night hadn't even really started yet. Hard to believe, when it had already been my most eventful in, well, ages. I watched the Chathams walk across the lot, keeping my eyes on them until they folded into the crowd by the doors. Then I raced home, praying for green lights, pulling into the garage at 9:35. I went inside with my apologies ready, only to find the downstairs empty. My mom was already in bed. My dad shut away in his office on a call. I'd done the right thing. I always did. It just would have been nice if someone had noticed. Chapter 5. The flyer was sitting on the table when I came down for breakfast Monday morning. I saw it as soon as I walked in the kitchen, but it wasn't until I got up close that I could read what it said. Family Day, Saturday, September 20th, 1 to 5 p.m. Info, extension 2002, or warden@lincolncorrection.us. What's this? I said to my mom, who was at the stove pushing some bacon around in a pan. She glanced over her shoulder. It's coming up at Lincoln in a few weeks. But Peyton doesn't want me there, I said, right? It's not that he doesn't want you. It's just... She trailed off, sighing. I'm hoping this opportunity might change his mind. When my brother was first sent to prison, he had to submit forms for each person he wanted to visit him. My mom and dad were no-brainers, of course, as was Ames, and my mom assumed I'd be as well. But despite the fact that minors and children were allowed, even encouraged, as Lincoln believed connection with family was very important for inmates, Peyton said no. He didn't want me to see him there. And I was so, so glad. My mother, however, was convinced he'd feel differently eventually. She wanted me to be part of this, just as she wanted me to talk to Peyton when he called collect and write him letters, both things that I resisted. I knew this made me a terrible sister, but I hadn't known what to say to my brother when he was sitting across this very same breakfast table, much less locked away in a prison in another state. It came naturally to both my mom and Ames to still be fully on Team Peyton, despite what he'd done to David Ibarra, not to mention our family. It wasn't that easy for me. I'd spoken to him only twice since he'd been sent away, both times when I was the only one home to answer the phone. Letting it ring until it went to voicemail was not an option. It was not easy for Peyton to get access to a phone. If he did, we were to accept the call and stay on as long as he was allowed to talk. Period. I'd learned this the hard way one afternoon when my mom was at the grocery store. I answered, said yes to the call, then waited through a series of clicks and beeps. Finally, my brother spoke. Sydney? It was the first time I'd heard his voice in over a month. He sounded far away, like he was standing back from the receiver. Also, there was a steady buzz on the line, which made it hard to make him out. "Hey," I said, "Mom's not here." I regretted this the minute I said it. In my defense, though, she was the one he usually spoke with. If my dad answered, the conversations were always shorter and more about legal issues than anything else. Oh. There was a pause. Then, how are you? I'm okay. You? I winced. You don't ask someone in prison how they're doing. Just assume the answer is not so good. But Peyton replied anyway. I'm all right. It's boring here more than anything else. I knew he was just making conversation. But all I could think of was David Ibarra in his wheelchair. That had to be boring, too. You should write me a letter, he said then. Fill me in on what's going on with you. This conversation was hard enough. Now he wanted me to put words on a page? My mom had said that mail could be a huge element in a prisoner's mental health, which was why she'd recruited many in our family and several close friends to send letters and postcards. She'd even provided stamps and address envelopes, a stack of which sat untouched on the desk in my room.